threads of art, culture, and history, David Swatling creates an oral tapestry.
It's a stress-free zone. I've actually decorated the whole place with kitsch, Bura kitsch, politically incorrect things like whites-only signs. And people laugh. Black people laugh. White people laugh. Old people say this is fantastic. Young people say this is absolute rubbish, but isn't it divine? And it's just taking the past and remembering it with a sense of humor. Because again, the symbols are very important, and some of the symbols are very bad. Now, what do we do? Do we destroy the symbols by banning them and saying you may not have a picture of the flag, or do you just put it into a healthy perspective with the jokes in the sort of the Disneyland of South African politics?
The Disneyland of South African politics has provided writer and performer Peter Dirk Uys with a wealth of material over the years. He was born in Cape Town in 1945 to a Jewish Berlin-born mother and a Calvinist Afrikaner father, and is reputedly related to a 17th century black Cape courtesan, making him a true local native. He started irritating South African politicians and censors with his plays in 1973. When most of them were banned, he launched his special brand of one-man showmanship in 1981, satirizing political targets that are now, as he says, either dead, in retirement, in disgrace, insane, incontinent, forgotten, or recycled as avid supporters of black majority rule. In 1988, he visited Holland for the first time with his show Adapt or Die, an experience he remembers vividly. Apartheid, after all, is a Dutch word. And what was the response of Dutch audiences to his work 10 years ago, when a cultural boycott was still in place against South Africa?
Great discomfort about the fact that I was a white Afrikaner, who was anti-apartheid but not anti-South African. To most people here, it was the same thing. And I said that it's not the same thing. I mean, being anti-apartheid means you are against the 900,000 people who have voted for apartheid. And if you're anti-South African, you're throwing 37 million people out of the door. So there's a difference. I was also very specific about my feelings of the cultural boycott. I'd never understood it. Nobody could explain what it meant. If you have the answer to the problem, why don't you share it? Why hide it? Why, especially with culture, which is such a vibrant part of communication. So I had some wonderful arguments. We shouted at each other, and it was great fun. But I found it very important for my development, giving me my freedom of expression to be able to stand here and stand up for what I believed in. And it was something I couldn't do in South Africa, certainly not without my dress on.
Yes, not only did Peter Dirk Uys satirize an extremely touchy political situation, he did it in drag. One wonders how he survived at all. But there are many ways for a clever performer whose mind works on a different level than his political targets. For example, he avoided state censors by not writing scripts, just keeping everything in his head.
Yes, it's interesting, you know, when people say your time as a writer, I say my time as a writer was not writing. Because the moment something was done on paper, they could get hold of it. It was by law you had to submit your writing to the censor board, and then they could obviously decide what to do with it. So on the one hand, it wasn't even a decision. I mean, in retrospect, it all sounds so glib, but at the time it was a case of, well, to hell with the script, I might as well just make it up, not as I go along, but sort of work in code. Very often I translated my Afrikaans work into English, which meant that they were less interested in the English, because as far as they were concerned, English was a decadent language. But whatever happened in Afrikaans, that was immediately bannable, and very much of it was banned. But I think the bottom line was I learned very soon that my censor board were a lot of idiots. They were a lot of fools. They didn't know their work. They didn't know how to do their job properly. If they'd done their job properly, they would have killed me within the first 3 months or given me a check of R1 million. That's one way of killing opposition. So I managed to survive purely on one's wits. I mean, one had to do things that had no definition. And what I did was pretty much an original way in South Africa of making fun of the government, I suppose.
His best example of this was his character creation, Evita Besoudenhout, whom he brought to Amsterdam in 1991. I saw the show back then, and for an item on Mirror Images, asked Evita why she had decided to sue her creator, Peter Dirk Uys, for his very scathing and unauthorized biography about her, entitled A Part Hate, A Part Love.
You will, of course, realize that in the new South Africa, we have freedom of speech. And I feel that Peter Dirk Uys has used his position as a third-rate comedian to libel me and the South African government and accuse us of such appalling things. You know, apartheid was a silly experiment that failed. I don't think there's any reason to be so negative. We must look to the future, and I'm quite happy to apologize for apartheid. It was a terrible mistake. We in the South African government are very, very sorry, and we promise we won't do it again.
Evita Besoudenhout, South African ambassador to Bapatikoswetti, an independent black homeland republic, both creations of satirist Peter Dirk Uys, who brought his double-edged mix of humor and politics to the Netherlands recently with his stage performance An Audience with Evita Besoudenhout. I asked him which came first, the book or the play?
Actually, the book came first. I did the biography of Evita Besoudenhout, which took about 5 years of research, because basically, although the story is a soap opera, it's like a carbolic soap opera, the story of the Besoudenhout family. It's very much based on the historical realities of apartheid. And when the book came out, some of the legal people said they were quite worried about the aspects of naming real people in the book. They were worried about people's reactions. So I thought, well, if I do a show at the same time in which Evita Besoudenhout sues me for libel, let anybody else who wants to stand in the queue behind us. That was a great diversion tactic. And then the show became something that did stand on its own feet as well, as a mirror of the new South Africa. And then the second half is Evita taking questions from the audience. And this actually is a sort of a rather sly way to try and encourage people to take the chance of saying, excuse me, but can I also say something? And I get some wonderful questions from audiences there. Young black kids who say things like, what do you think of blacks, Mrs. Besoudenhout? Are you frightened of blacks? And what is our future in South Africa? And are you going to be part of our new government? And if Mr. Mandela asks you to become a diplomat, would you become? And you've got nice legs. You know, just great things like that. And it's lovely because I always felt if we laugh at fear, you cannot be that frightened of that fear. And government has always, I think, bad government, has always survived on fear and frightened people. And I hate that. I mean, the idea of anybody being frightened through politics is appalling, because after all, politicians are there because we put them there. And I've always felt if the politicians don't like what I do, let them resign. It's very simple.
South Africa's going to the Olympics for the first time this year. Is that exciting to you?
Of course it is so exciting that South Africa's going back to the Olympic Games. You know, all these terrible sanctions that we went through were so counterproductive. They certainly didn't change our policies in Pretoria, although sanctions put 6 million blacks out of work. So really, it's not our fault, but the fault of the so-called civilized world. But now, thanks to F.W. de Klerk, he lifted all the apartheid laws and we were immediately let back into world sport. I mean, besides the fact that no blacks yet have a vote in South Africa. But unfortunately, we are not going to use our symbol of the springbok because it is too touchy. We probably will use the symbol of the zebra. And as you know, the zebra is an example of forced racial integration.
New South Africa, which you always seem to put in quotes.
Yes, yes.
Are there still strict limits in terms of what you can do or not do?
Well, I've always believed that nothing is beyond satire. Nothing. But it depends how you satirize. It's very hard to satirize cancer. It's virtually impossible to satirize Auschwitz. And it is very, very tricky to satirize AIDS. But everything has got to be commented on. And some things need very brutal satire. I think a white society that has lived arrogantly for so long on the most appalling system of inhumanity and pretends that they are still Christians, I mean, that is funny in a very sick way. And in the new quote-unquote South Africa, where everyone has got a relative freedom to make their dreams come true, I have got a great alphabet of targets. I mean, the ANC, Nelson Mandela, very specifically Winnie Mandela, are part of my chorus line.
An excerpt from my 1991 interview with Uys on Mirror Images. His chorus line of characters might change as the political situation in South Africa changed, but the center of his work would always be Evita Besoudenhout, the most famous white woman in South Africa whom everyone loved to hate.
Being trained as an actor, I suppose, opened up the door to various other types of human beings. I remember I was very interested in makeup at drama school. I didn't have much talent as an actor, so I was a stage manager. But I remember how through makeup I could change my face into Marlene Dietrich was in town in the 60s, and so there was the Dietrich face, and Laurence Olivier as Othello, and I slapped on the black makeup and all that. So I've always just felt it was a very important part of my alphabet to explore. I also prefer playing women to men because women are more interesting. I think women have much more of an alphabet. And also in a Calvinist society where I come from, the idea of a man wearing a dress was just so shocking that everybody came to watch and listen. So Evita Besoudenhout became a very important clown figure for me. The fact that the public took her over and demanded more information meant that I had to create more of a life for her, and then eventually a job and a surname and a family. And now I think I've got such a background to her opinions that I can really do her without thinking. I mean, my job is to make her look physically believable so that the women recognize the woman and the men forget there's a man inside the woman. And she sometimes says things that I hear and I think, oh, I don't know where this is going. But somehow Evita manages to tie it up through her extraordinary hypocrisy, her total lack of humor, her total lack of irony, which makes me laugh very much because she's such a very typical survivor, white survivor in South Africa at the moment.
In 1994, Evita Besoudenhout returned to Holland just after the first post-apartheid elections in South Africa. The show was called One Man, One Vote. And this time, it was Dira Sujan who brought Evita to the airwaves on East of Edam.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Goeienaand, liewe dames en heren in Utrecht. My name is Evita Besoudenhout. I am not the president of South Africa. For a very good reason. It's not because I'm white. It's not because I'm a woman. It's because I turned down the job.
I've just felt it very important to use the guilt that I felt as a white South African and the guilt that I had as an Afrikaner being responsible for apartheid, to use that guilt in a positive way, to make sure that what we created would not happen again. And my weapon against that was the weapon of humour and the weapon of irony and satire.
Well, there's been nothing positive about apartheid since its conception, but it has given you great fodder for your act. What are you going to do now that apartheid is gone or going or on its way out?
Well, apartheid is out officially as the concept that was made world famous through South Africa, but ethnic cleansing is still there, and ethnic cleansing is the cousin of apartheid, and they're getting away with ethnic cleansing. The homeland's absurdity is becoming a reality all over Eastern Europe. Everybody wants a homeland and a flag and an opera house and a civil war. Racism is not something that has been cured. In fact, racism is like AIDS. It's just taking over. I do the comedy of prejudice. I reflect the absurdity of reality. But because it's reflected in theatre, on a stage, you've got to laugh at racism, because racism is absurd. I mean, the fact that two people refuse to sit together in the same room because the one is a different color to the other, or the one is a different religion to the other, or the one has got a life-sapping disease and therefore nobody wants to touch their hands, you've got to laugh at it. It's so absurd. It is so ridiculous. But in real life, it's terribly, terribly damaging.
Now, it's very easy to lampoon the characters of the Broederbond, the great National Party leaders and things. In a way, they're a sort of caricature of themselves. But now, with the new leaders of South Africa, how are you going to lampoon them? I mean, you do a little act of Tutu. He's a Nobel Prize winner. He's beloved all around the world. I suspect you respect him as well. How do you caricature the people that you respect and admire?
Well, Tutu's there because he wanted to be in the show. I mean, he said, "Where am I? Where am I in your show?" Desmond Tutu is a great character, and I think he's somebody, yes, people love him, and I love him, and he's very theatrical, and he's very warm, and he's very funny.
I mean, the characters present themselves. I don't want to sound like Shirley MacLaine now, but they really do. When the time is right, they present themselves. I do a lot of preparation, and I do a lot of waiting. I waited for Margaret Thatcher for a long time before I found her.
Can we call them out for a quick little bow? Bishop Tutu and Mrs. Thatcher, Mr. Clinton, can you please come out and say hello?
Well, thank you. Thank you very much, you know, as Archbishop Desmond Tutu. I'm so excited. It has been the most wonderful miracle. And as you know, we have a unique situation in South Africa. Nelson Mandela is our president. And Nelson Mandela is unique in the world because, as you know, he first went to jail and then went into politics, not the other way around.
Thank you. Thank you so much for allowing me a few words just to reiterate that it is thanks to me that apartheid is dead. But as you know, unfortunately, I'm no longer resident in Buckingham, in number 10 Downing Street. So let me introduce you to someone who is, to someone who pretends to be in charge, but someone who just keeps letting me down. Now, don't worry, this will not be a major change.
Hello, the name is Major, John Major. Frankly, I've no idea whatsoever what I'm doing here. But as long as it's not Maastricht, here I am, and I'm happy to be here. So there, so there, so there, so there, so...
Hi, the name is Bill Clinton. I'm American. Let's do things in South Africa the American way. Most of the whites want to live in California. Most of our blacks want to move back to Africa. Let's swap.
Peter Dirk Ouse's New Faces of 1994, talking to Dira Sujan. Now, 4 years later, Ouse and company were again in Holland with a new show, live from Boracic Park. But since I was in America and Dira was in the Far East, it was Neville Powys who talked with the political satirist about adapting to the new situation in South Africa.
Well, I mean, now it's so different to then, and yet it's so similar, because politicians are always the same. They will always rip us off. They always tell lies. They always pretend they know better and they know nothing. And it's our fault. I mean, the fact that we are voting with that precious opinion, strangers, into positions of power over our families is the most ludicrous thing under the sun. And then we're surprised when these politicians steal the money, run away, and not do the job. So that's not changed. What has changed is the culture has changed from a culture of death to a culture of life. Everything during apartheid was death. We were killing children, we were shooting people, we were destroying, and it was just all blood and horror. It was a night. It was cancer. It was political cancer. Now in the culture of life, we are in remission. So I can assure you, I don't look back with nostalgia to the days of the cancer. The remission means we have got opinion. Everyone has the right to opinion in South Africa. I don't have to speak on behalf of people who have no voice. I very much feel I can stand up there as a middle-aged, white, gay, bald, fat comedian who's Jewish and Afrikaans, belonging to both chosen people, who is known as an honorary whatnot in the Kaap, so I feel that I also have my black blood flowing through my veins. And it's my opinion, and the audience can take it or leave it, and that's their democratic right. So I feel much freer. And also, I think the politics is not as specific as it was. I think in the old days, I could come here with all the Boertas and all the apartheid things, and my audience knew what I was talking about because it hadn't changed in 40 years. Now it changes every 40 seconds. So most of my politicians in South Africa will mean nothing to the audience here, besides the fact that I don't want to be a white comedian doing black people. That's not what works for me as comedy. I don't want to do accents and suddenly become ethnically interesting. So I rather create characters that reflect a political reality as opposed to doing the snapshots of the politicians. Of course, Winnie Mandela is my Maria Callas. I mean, she is such a huge cartoon character. Tutu and Mandela as well are so well known. But I don't really want to get involved with the other cartoons of black politicians. I'd rather reflect what is happening in the society itself. So I think that's where the main changes come. And I'm optimistic, believe it or not. As a South African optimist, that means that I expect the worst, hoping that the worst will never be as bad as I imagine. And I'm usually pleasantly surprised.
What kind of response do you get from people that are in the government that see your show?
I've had incredibly shocking support from very high up, very, very high up indeed. In fact, I sometimes wonder exactly what is going to happen to my type of comedy when I stop, because sadly, I haven't really got anybody coming up from behind with their own alphabet. I've seen politicians look very angry, which is great, which means that they have got something to hide. I've seen other politicians scream with laughter because they have a sense of humor. And I think most of our new politicians in South Africa have a great sense of humor. They survived all those years in jail and came out smiling, which is more than I can say for many of us whites who had such a good time. We've gone into this democracy with frowns on our faces. I really don't care, frankly, what the politicians think. I always feel if they don't like it, they can retire. I always believe that a politician who doesn't have a sense of humor has got something to hide. And I don't want to fall in love with my targets. I do love Nelson Mandela, and it has made me a failed satirist, and I admit to that with open arms. I have met Winnie Mandela, and I've fallen in love with her as well. So I don't actually want to meet her again, because I want to be free to point a finger into a very, very sinister area, because I really believe that Winnie could become our president. And I maybe even will go as far as to say that maybe this is the only way we will get out of this terrible speed wobble of violence and corruption, is to have somebody there who understands exactly what it means to be violent and corrupt. So I'm not sure. Again, maybe I'm going to be proved wrong, and then I'll be happy to say I was wrong. But I want to be prepared for whatever happens. And I'm certainly being given fantastic material by my new government. They're not letting me down.
How does it feel being in Holland, back in Holland, Vita?
I always love coming to Holland because I just want to say thank you for everything you Dutch have done for us. First of all, you gave us Hendrik Verwoerd, who was a Dutchman who came all the way to South Africa with apartheid. And so I'm very happy to bring the remains of apartheid back to Holland so you can use it against your refugees. And then, of course, there's tremendous culture here in Holland. I think it's a very pretty, very small little country. I mean, if you drive very quickly, you end up in Belgium or in Denmark. But it is a place that we enjoy because we can understand more or less what you say in Dutch if you don't speak too quickly. And we like all the Rembrandt van Rijn paintings and the Vincent van Gogh things that we can see. And so many South Africans are still living here in Holland. The refugees who can't afford to come back or are too scared of the violence in South Africa. But there's enough violence in Holland to make them feel at home.
How are you getting on with Mrs. Mandela if you see her?
I'm a bit nervous of Winnie Mandela. You know, we say in Afrikaans, stille water, diepe grond, daaronder toi toi Winnie rond. So Winnie she calls herself the Black Evita. And of course, I find that a great compliment. But it's not impossible that Winnie might become the president in the year 2000. So I might even lead the National Party into the election of 99. And then it'll be the two Evitas, the one against the other. And we'll see who wins.
If response to Evita's recent series on South African television is any indication, she'll win by a landslide. In the show, she visited important political figures in their homes and offices, including Nelson Mandela. And though Evita took it in stride, Peter Dirk Uys was overwhelmed by the experience.
It was absolutely shocking. I couldn't believe that they knew who I was, firstly, what I'd been doing. And then they said, but we saw your videos in jail and in exile, and Evita was on the wall of our cells. It was remarkable. What it actually did for me was to break down the propaganda that I'd grown up with, that these people were enemies, that these people were communists and terrorists and what all those ridiculous names. I immediately found out that besides the fact that they were great sports, they were also enormously passionate about the country. They loved the country. They spoke Afrikaans. They didn't have any bitterness against what my tribe had done to them. And their generosity was remarkable. It was a very important experience for me to do the Funny Galore series, which is what it was called. I'm now working on a new TV series which reflects my character Noelle Fine, who is my white liberal, my Jewish African princess. And that'll be a great saga showing the white liberal as opposed to the white Afrikaans conservative, which I've been obviously spending a lot of time with, and Evita. And Noel's story is also a story of a great survivor who fought apartheid, but she first went to the hairdresser to have a nice haircut, you know, and have lipstick and nails. So we'll see how that goes. And I find it a very exciting reality being part of an irrelevant white minority, which is what I am. And there's no way that I'm going to become the president of the country or even the head of any department or even a playwright of note. I must be a little noisy mosquito in various corners and just keep people busy. And my job as an entertainer is to entertain, and there's an enormous amount to entertain with.
I noticed that in the show last night, I was quite touched in a way by the way that you were simply yourself when the show opened. You were totally who you are, and you were, you know, sort of basically proclaiming that you're still alive, you survived. And I found it very personal, and I enjoyed that.
Mm. That's yes, personal is the word, yes. For many, many years, I was very tentative about being personal because I didn't think it was important. I had no opinions. Why should I, as a white South African, have an opinion? It wasn't important at all. There were too many black people with very important opinions. But now in a democracy, I don't see the color. To me, it's neither here nor there being white or black. I think it's important to be verbal in one's concern that freedom is not something you take for granted. I think it's totalitarianism is easy. I mean, we have no freedom. Then you can spend your life shouting for freedom. But when you have it, you've got to look after it like a very rare flower, not leave it lying around because people steal it and then put paste in their place, like Maggie Thatcher did with British freedom. I think they left their freedom lying around and she took it. It's never been the same. And I just think it's with our young democracy being so young, that the danger of dropping it now and damaging it with carelessness is enormous. So one has to just reinvent ways of making people realize what fun it can be, although it's not fun. I mean, the idea of a new election next year is dreadful. Everybody says, oh, God, we're not going to vote again. Oh, my God, that means all those queues and the pink paper, the blue paper, the orange paper, the yellow paper, and who cares? Well, that's the death of democracy, those terrible words, who cares? So if I can use my entertainment chorus line to reflect voter education and the importance of voting and using that enormous power we have as individuals to change the world, and that's what democracy has brought to me, at least, and that's something that I'll always keep as my shield.
For the time being, Peter Dirk Ouse also has the stress-free zone of his own theatre just outside Cape Town. But in an article entitled Where the South African Theatre is Going, he takes a somewhat bleak view on the future. We have freedom of speech, he writes, but no speech. However, it's not his last word on the subject.
Well, the theatre has always survived in spite of us, 2,000 years. It's been through the most terrible, terrible realities, and it's come out. We might not survive, but the theatre will survive. Yes, people aren't coming to the theatre. They'd rather stay at home. I just think it's not their fault. It's maybe our theatre isn't exciting enough. We have to reinvent what we do live. There's so much that people have to choose from, which is not live, but pretty live. The videos, the games, the safety of sitting at home with a gun and the Rottweiler, not coming out and having to lose your car and your life on the way to the theatre, and then be bored, which is much worse than anything else. I find, in a strange way, having put a theatre into a field in the middle of nowhere makes people want to come to it because it's got an adventure. I don't think people want to sit in rows watching something that somebody wrote 30 years ago, directed by somebody who's not there, with people repeating the same movement and same word every night. I don't particularly want to do that either. I've tried to keep my theatre terribly of the moment. Very often I base it on the newspaper, which I have in my hand. Very often Evita does a question-answer with the audience, and so it's a very, very risky, dangerous thing, and that makes people want to come because it is live. It is now. Anything is possible. And maybe, again, I am not upset by us becoming a third-world African democracy. We are an African state. We're not a first-world state. The First World has not done us much good. The First World brought us apartheid and segregation and corruption. And as many black people will say, AIDS, and that's where I say, no, I'm sorry, darling, it has not. And that's also one of the areas that one has to use education and entertainment, is to make people realize that everybody, that AIDS is the only democratic thing in the country, doesn't choose sides, everybody. We've got a huge problem with AIDS. So that's another nightmare that we have, another bridge we have to cross. So the theatres will survive. We've just got to find new ways of entertaining, and that's always the bottom line. It's entertainment. Even if you entertain people with their fear, you make them laugh at their fear. So I am optimistic about the future of theatre, concerned about our lack of passion and our lack of adventure. But that's a problem we'll have to solve by just finding the right key for the door. That's all.
I think Peter Dirk Ouse has the right key. My thanks to Rose DeVilde for the technical production today. Until next time, I'm David Swadling saying thanks for listening.